Welcome to Spiritually Raw. We expose and explore controversial truths, myths, and theories surrounding the spirit world. Guests include QAnon experts, investigators, debunkers, and skeptics of the supernatural, unexplained, and flat-out unimaginable. Content discussed on this show is not necessarily the opinion of the cast of Spiritually Raw, and topics quite often are for mature audiences only. This show is not intended to replace any medical, financial, or legal advice, and is for entertainment purposes only. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. Hello, everybody. How are you? And welcome to Spiritually Raw. Thank you so much for your energy exchange with us today. And we hope you woke to the most miracle morning and are also having the most fortunate day today. We have a great new friend here, Victor Avila. And he is where April's going to be telling you more about him in just a moment. I do want to remind you, if you haven't already, kindly hit the subscribe button, turn on the notification bell. And don't forget to check out our channels on YouTube. We're going to have links in the description below. We have our Spiritually Raw channel on YouTube in there and also our super channels on YouTube. So don't miss out there, because that's that place where you want to go, where they don't bug you for the, you know, big C word, right? Yeah, so check it out over there, guys. It's great stuff over there. Thank you very much for having us in your home. So more about Victor.
Yep, but first, also, if you haven't already, please do subscribe to our Telegram channels, the group chat, and also the channel. And for those of you, thank you so much for everybody that's been purchasing the Hempworks. I know we're getting amazing testimonials. The messages that we're receiving and the benefits that people are sharing are just extraordinary. So for those of you that are looking for that extra higher consciousness to achieve that breakthrough, or maybe you're just looking for something to help with, you know, the cracks and the kinks and the this and the that.
You know what I'm getting a lot of notes on is the sleep.
And the sleep.
The sleep. Everybody's like,
the
totally,
melatonin is the bomb. If you
it's
have
the best,
any,
isn't it?
Yes, issues. And there's so many people in the world that have issues with sleep, especially because of everything that's going on and the energies and the shifts and you waking up at 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning. This will take you from the time you close your eyes within 15 minutes till you wake up in the morning, and you're going to wake up fresh as a daisy. It's the best sleep you're going to possibly get. There's no side effects from it at all either.
So. Yeah, so it's awesome, guys. Give it a shot and check out our friends over there. The link's in the description above there. So see if they can do for you what they've done for us. So more about Victor.
Yeah. Yes, let's talk about Victor Avila. He is a retired supervisory special agent with the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, also known as ICE. Homeland Security Investigations under the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, DHS. He is the author of Agent Under Fire. This is his true story of unprecedented corruption, international intrigue, human trafficking, money laundering, drug running, mass murders, and government invasion. We're so excited to have you here
join
today.
Join us in welcoming Victor to the show. How are you, Victor?
I'm doing really good. Thank you so much for having me today.
Thank you. And thank you for your service, my brother. Thank you so much for your service. Yeah, that's great.
You guys have a tough road. It's not easy at all.
So, yeah, you do, man. So tell us a little bit about your backstory a bit, and, you know, a little bit about, you know, what you've done and what is the triggers that's prompted you to say, okay, hey, I'm out here now. I got to start getting these messages out here. What's been your trigger?
That's a good word. And actually that's a word that I didn't know before, after I was shot in the line of duty in 2011, while I was on assignment in Mexico. I was assigned to the U.S. Embassy, the ICE office there in Mexico City. My partner and I were ambushed on an assignment, and, we were ambushed by the Zeta, drug cartel, which I don't even call them drug cartels anymore. These guys are highly organized cartels, but we could talk a little bit about them.
Yeah.
But we were ambushed on a Highway 57 on a mission between Mexico and Monterrey, Mexico City and Monterrey. And unfortunately, Special Agent Jaime Zapata lost his life tragically in the line of duty. And I was shot 3 times and miraculously survived that ambush. We were shot at over 100 rounds.
Oh my God!
By these vicious cartel, we were ambushed literally on the, you know, pushed to the side of the road by 2 SUVs full of 8 gunmen, and a lot of things conspired to inspire that day. That you know, I'm here by the grace of God, sharing the story. And also to share the memory of Special Agent Jaime Zapata and the service that he gave in protecting our homeland, stuff that we're going to be talking about today that's still ongoing, and talking about the trafficking and everything else that we continue to see coming from the southern border. And so you talk about a trigger that changed not only my life, but my family's life. It turned it upside down, you know, from being extracted from the country of Mexico and coming back to the U.S. And then dealing with every day, not only the physical recovery. I got shot once in the chest and twice in my left leg. And so not only going through the physical recovery, but I think the emotional and mental recovery was the hardest part. You know, the diagnosis came in of PTSD and depression and anxiety. You talk about the sleeping issues. Insomnia was nice.
Oh, I can imagine.
The night terrors, hair loss. I mean, it was some dark days after the shooting. And sometimes I describe, you know, this shooting was a very, very traumatic event. It was an event that took a long time on this highway. It wasn't a shooting that took 7 seconds and it was gone. It was a long time. We were on that highway for 40 minutes before anyone came to help us.
Whoa.
And so it was, you talk about
the trauma.
The trauma and the, I always try to, you know, tell people that was such a traumatic event to go through, but the aftermath was so much longer that life goes on and you have to learn and kind of continue to deal with this. And so I started to speak out more about it because I see in the law enforcement world how we were losing a lot of police officers to suicide. It is a hard time to be a law enforcement officer at any level right now. You talk about our border agents. They're having a hard time right now dealing with everything that's happening down in the southern border. And so it is it's something that I share. I'm not ashamed of it. I never was. I think it's important to share the story so people can know that if, in fact, you've gone through some kind of traumatic event, and it doesn't have to be law enforcement related. I've learned a lot about trauma. I've read a lot of books about it. Trauma comes in many, many fashions, a car accident, a surgery gone wrong.
It could come from past lives, even.
Past lives. There's ways that you can deal with it. There's ways that it's treatable. And that's why I'm here today, because not only did I have the treatment, but I also had what's most important is the backing of my wife and my kids and my family.
Aww.
Which was so important. I kid around now and say if I wasn't a good guy to be around before, you know, they had a reason, especially my wife. She could have, you know, bailed out and said, I'm done, and I could have left. But I'm very fortunate that they stuck with me and their resiliency really came through. And I'm here to share the story.
Victor, how long did it take you?
I have so many questions.
Yeah, I know you do. That's why I want to get one in, because I know you.
I have a list.
How long do you think it, you know, when this first happened to you, what was your recovery time? Number one, and as you were going through this, was there a point, did you start off recovering like, okay, I'm fighting for this? Or was there a point where you feel like, oh man, maybe I just want to give up?
Great question. Initially, it was a lot of concentration on the physical wounds, right? I was shipped to DC, my family and I were moved to DC, and I went through walking back again and all that. That took about 6 months. And then my mind, that's a great question, because this is what happened to me. PTSD works very differently for very different for everyone, and there's very different types of PTSD. And I learned that PTSD also manifests itself very physically as well. I suffer from hyperhidrosis. That's excessive sweating of the hands and of the underarms. All of a sudden, I'm sweating through my undershirt, my shirt, my suit, which is very embarrassing. This is a problem that I never had before. And so I, after the physical recovery, all I wanted to do was get back to work. And I did. We got shipped to Spain placed. We wanted to go away, stay away, and kind of get away, and went to Madrid. And it was in Madrid that your question is so, no one had ever asked me that question. That's why I'm kind of excited to answer it, because to me, and I remember my therapist telling me, PTSD, you don't know when it's gonna, you just don't know when it's going to happen. To me, I was like, fine. I was okay. I've recovered physically enough to go back to work. And then 8 months into being in Madrid, one day, just without any notice, I did not want to get out of bed. And I did not ever have that issue ever in my life, ever. Mm. As a matter of fact, I was the kind of a worker, and I had that work ethic by my parents. I rarely called in sick. I was that person that went to work all the time, and I could not get out of bed, and I didn't want to go to work. I was very confused, and I told my wife, and my kids were very confused. Like, what's wrong with that? I was going to
say, what did your wife, like, that's, you know, when your spouse has a switch like that.
It was a very, very difficult time. Somewhat to me, somewhat embarrassing that mm-hmm. my kids would go to school in the morning and I was in bed. I didn't want to be, I was up. I was always up every day. I did not want to get out of bed. I started getting hair loss, mm-hmm. weight gain. I gained a lot of weight. Luckily, I've never had any drug substance abuse issues or alcohol. I'm very lucky in that aspect, but food was my escape. I ate a lot. I gained a lot of weight. And you talk about the depression and all that hitting it one day, just boom, hit. And so then the other part of the nightmare begins, because my agency didn't respond adequately in saying, let's help Victor here. Let's take care of them. I had to learn, being in Spain didn't help. I wanted to seek help, to some counseling, something that I did on my own, and found someone to start talking about it. And it took us a long, slow process, because there was a lot of sleepless nights. There was a lot of, you talk about triggers, flashbacks. The night terrors were the worst for me. These are like worse than nightmares.
Where you're paralyzed.
Yes, I would at sometimes be in kind of a fetal position in bed, sweating at night with a fear. With me, the night terrors was a fear that I was so afraid that I couldn't even get off of the bed. I couldn't step on the floor. I mean, it was horrific, horrific. My wife trying to, trying to do the best that she can there next to me. And so it was a process that slowly and emotionally, with a lot of faith as well, just trying to cope with it. And with the counseling that I sought over there, it started helping a little bit. And some medication helped me. I guess it was back then, I don't know, this SNRI, kind of an anti-anxiety medication, antidepressant medication, helped me a little bit to stabilize my mood.
That has side effects too.
It surely does. It surely does, because you don't learn about the side effects until you've been on it for a while.
The side effects. Then you have to experience it. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. A lot of physical side effects. Weight gain was another one on top of it, which is something that I struggled, because as an agent, I always maintain a good, good healthy lifestyle in the gym. I didn't want to go work out, but I started seeing. Months into it, I started seeing the change, and I wanted to better myself. And so I eventually started, there was a lot of pain involved in my lower back and my hips, which, by the way, I still get treated to this day. I got an injection last week on my hip that I still continue to get those. So I'm looking at your products, and maybe that's something that I'm looking to possibly help me, because I still suffer from severe back spasms once in a while. That they'll take me out for a couple of days, but it was a long process. It didn't end there. It was counseling. After we left Madrid, came back to the States, continued that. Eventually, it got to the point where my agency didn't want me back. They didn't offer a position to go back to work, and I was still kind of stubborn, thinking I was very loyal, a loyal government employee. Eventually. Discovered that they didn't want me back, and then I didn't want to be back. So in 2015, I went for sought a medical retirement, which was granted.
Okay. Oh, so at least you got that. So you were able to, you were able to get everything fully due to you then? No problem.
Yes.
Then?
Yes.
That's good.
Yes.
All right. God bless
you. Thank God for that.
How was this?
Oh, hold on, my turn. I'm going to put two in before Jay starts. Number one, I'm wondering, do you connect with your partner? Do you feel his presence, number one? And then number two, what possibly went through your mind when you realized that it was an ambush and there was over 40 minutes before help was coming?
So the first question is, I feel a very, very close connection, especially with the Zapata family. I'm the last one to see their son. Jaime Zapata was he was single. He didn't have any kids. He was 32 at the time. And initially it was a lot of pressure when I would see the family because, you know, they see me and they see their son like, you're the last one to be with him. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, I have the connection. The reason why I go out and do public speaking events and do these podcasts as well, not only what I talk about my expertise as an agent and border security, but this part of it as well, as an honor to Jaime Zapata and his memory. I do all of my presentations. I did one last week in Miami, and they're always an honor and a tribute to him, because I think it's important for people to know his story, to know the sacrifice that he gave. Now, the second part of your question there, what was the second part there?
What went through your mind when you realized you're being ambushed, and then that after the fact, you realized there was no support and there was no call for support. You had no backup.
No backup. Let me tell you, I felt so alone. And so, as a Mexican American, a Hispanic, my heritage is from there. I felt like such a foreigner being an American. Mm-hmm. I could have been in China for all intents and purposes. That's how I felt. I felt so distant, so alone. And that time of the ambush was the word that I described to you was surreal. When the initial gunshots happen, it takes, even as a trained agent, as a law enforcement, it takes something for your mind to click. And it was disbelief, I guess that's the word. Mm-hmm. It's like, I couldn't believe that this was actually happening to us at that time.
Can I ask you one quick question? And your partner, did he survive while you were together? At what point did he actually pass?
That's a great question. I only know the official. He was unresponsive. He was shot multiple times, and he had a lethal wound to his leg, which is that was a lethal shot. And it happened. We were in this suburban when we got a helicopter come and take us to the local hospital there in the state of San Luis Potosí. And he was unresponsive, but I believe he was still alive, and not until the doctor came and notified me that he had passed in the trauma room.
Mm-hmm. Was there any sense of that they tell you what took so long to get there while you were reporting it? What did they give you any sense of that?
Well, first of all, it was in Mexico, and I called. People can go online and they'll find a phone call that's recorded that I made from the suburban to the U.S. Embassy. It's a frantic call saying, "We are shot. We are shot," and send help. I called. The only person I trusted at that point was the head of the Mexican Federal Police, our vetted unit. We had a unit that we worked with in Mexico, and I called him. He's the one that dispatched that helicopter from Mexico City. We were at this point about 5 hours away from Mexico City. And so it took a long time. As you can imagine, the corruption and all the other issues in Mexico, you just can't just trust anyone at that point. And so they had to send specific people to rescue us.
Is there a point in your mind, or have you ever come to terms with the thought of why you?
Yeah, that's the survivor's guilt. Dealt with that. It ate me up a lot in the first couple of years. The what ifs, right? The what ifs. What if this? What if that? And yeah, you could go through a million of them, and the result never changes. And you're absolutely right. The answer I give is God decided not to take me that day. It's very simple. He wanted Jaime with him. He didn't want me here. He wanted to keep me here for a purpose. And sometimes that purpose doesn't have to be complicated. Sometimes it maybe it was just to see my kids grow up, simple as that. Maybe it was just to be with my family. But I feel a little bit of a bigger calling to express and share my expertise in what I've contributed in the law enforcement world and in security reasons when it comes to the border and protecting our homeland, that maybe serving in a different capacity later on in the future. I know that there's something out there for me, and I'm still, believe it or not, exploring those options.
That's awesome.
How did this happening to you, Victor? How did it affect your faith? In one meaning, that did it tailor your faith? Because you seem pretty inspired and connected. Mm-hmm. But did it tailor you to a different direction of faith, or was there a lot of, like, what went through your mind there as mm-hmm. far as where you were going through there from your mindset?
Just made my faith stronger. It made me I grew up Catholic. I grew up going to church. I pray. I've always prayed. Even if I didn't go to church as an adult on a regular basis, I've always had God as part of my life. I pray on a daily basis. If it's for a 5-second prayer, that's what I pray. I thank God for waking up every day. I thank God when I go to bed every day. And so I always had that. That was just part of my life. And all it did was that faith was really cemented, if you will. It was I knew that God was watching me. Talk about having protection on that day. It if you look at the scene and of all the bullets and everything that happened, I there's no explanation as to why I'm here, and so that's the only way I could come to that conclusion, and my faith obviously became a lot stronger that day.
Okay, thank you for that. I appreciate that. I want to get your view on how you see from your experience and from when you started and also now how you see it, your view on the border security mm-hmm. as far as how it's being handled. Do you feel like, because we see stuff in the news and I'm sure that's very different from what you see in the front line. So can you give us your perspective from the front line? Was that all handled properly, do you think, or was there things that you felt like really could have done better?
Right now, the border is out of control, and I disagree with the current administration and how they're handling, especially when it comes to the unaccompanied children. My specialty is human trafficking and child trafficking, and so that's what I did, and that's what I investigated. I've seen firsthand the atrocity and the heinous crime that this is. And
that in itself will give you serious nightmares.
That you're absolutely right. We have to go through our cyber crimes agents. When we hit a house, for example, I'll give you a great example. We hit a house. We, as the agents, as a criminal investigator, I never touch the computer because that's not my expertise. We have a cyber team that'll dismantle the computer, because most of these guys that are into child trafficking, they have the computers booby trapped, to mm-hmm. erase mm-hmm. if you hit a certain key. So our cyber guys would take care of that, but I would have to go view a lot of images and videos to be able to testify that, because I'm the case agent, and our cyber guys have to go to counseling every 6 months because I can't share with you the images here. You can't get those out of your head. It is just it's horrific. It's horrific. It's something that unfortunately exists in our world, and it's a very dark world. Mm-hmm. And it's happening now. And so tying it back to border security, it absolutely goes hand in hand, because right now the cartels, who are the ones benefiting by this kind of open border policy that we're seeing right now, is that these cartels, they're mainly known for trafficking drugs, but they learned very quickly that, wait a minute, we see that the humans pay almost as much or even more, especially if we not just smuggle the adults and smuggle them for a fee and get them over, which smuggling and trafficking are two different crimes. We'll smuggle the adults, but you know what? The women and children, why don't we exploit them? And that's when the trafficking becomes trafficking. And why don't we not only exploit them on their way in Mexico, mm-hmm. Central America, or when we get them to New York, to Atlanta, to Miami, all these places where I did investigations, and they hold these children and these victims, these women and boys in such horrific conditions where you know, they're being serviced, you know, they're servicing men and other individuals by the dozens on a daily basis.
That's so sick. And so just the thought of that is so sick and twisted on so many levels. The thought of number one being the person, the pimp, whatever you want to call that trafficker, that's twisted in itself. But then the whole other level of these people that want to diddle with little children is truly the most, nothing is sicker or more twisted than anything in this world than that.
I agree with you. For me, it's very difficult because they, I'll show my phone. They treat a human being like a phone, like a product, like a, this is it. They have, there's no feeling behind it. I've interviewed many traffickers and they have absolutely no spirituality, no faith, nothing. And these guys have coals as hard. It's hard. They're black souls. Mm. They see human beings as a commodity. There's no feeling there. And it's very hard to understand that as a person that does that, you like, how in the world can you would do this to another human being, especially a child? Mm-hmm. And, but unfortunately, what we're seeing at the southern border is only fueling that. Now, not everybody's being trafficked. I'll say that not everybody's being, exploited, but it opens the door for a lot more. Just yesterday, I posted on my Instagram a video of these people, by the way, that are coming right now, that we see these migrants by the tens of thousands are turning themselves in to Border Patrol. They come in and they turn themselves in and say, we're here to seek asylum. And that's why our Border Patrol agents are putting them in these, you've seen these camps, these cages, whatever you want to call them, because there's nowhere else to hold them. They're already overfilled, that they're having to send them into the interior. They're sending them to Dallas, to Houston, and they're going to send them the San Diego Convention Center. They're putting them in places because there's no more room to put them in the, on the border. Plus,
I was going to say, what's going to happen, Victor, when there is no more room? But you're saying literally now there is no more room.
There's no more room already.
Where do you go from here?
Well, that's the biggest challenge, because there's over 15,000 children, part of that, 15,000 children. And we don't know where the parents are. We don't know if the parents are in the U.S. or if they're back in their home country. Are they in Chicago? Are they in, where are they? And so there's, you can imagine the Health and Human Services, along with ICE and other agencies, are trying to find out and place these children correctly. Because what happened in 2014, 2015, when there was a surge of unaccompanied minors, guess what? They were putting the children back at the hands of the trafficker. Ugh. Because the trafficker would come and say, yeah, that's my child, or yeah, that's my nephew. And back then the Obama administration was like, let's get them out because we don't have place. So just place them anywhere. But we were placing them back at the hands of the bad guys. And that's what we're trying to avoid now. Is I think we avoid the whole thing by just sealing the border for now and not having the invitation of this continuing to happen, because it's going to continue to happen and it's only going to get worse.
Who do you have to, as far as the Border Patrol, Victor, who are you responsible to reporting to, or the organization that you work for? Who was overseeing you? That said, okay, like if you on the front line were saying, okay, let's seal the border, but who would come over and say, no, we're not doing this? Who would you have to answer to?
Well, that goes all the way up to Washington and the Department of Homeland Security. So it's a great point to explain. There's two divisions of, and I'll explain to you because I worked under ICE. ICE has two divisions, ERO, Enforcement Removal Operations, which is the one that deal with the detention facilities, the deportation, housing of illegal aliens, and all that. The other side is Homeland Security Investigations, where I worked as a criminal investigator, conducting the investigations of human trafficking, drug trafficking, arms trafficking, money laundering, and anything that has a nexus to our southern border or any border of Canada to the United States border. And so we work closely with both, but they have a chain of command. Border Patrol, another agency, CBP, Customs and Border Protection, they're on the front lines, you know, processing these individuals. Right now, they're just being, some of them are just being released. They're being admitted and without giving them a notice to appear, to come back in the future. Just right now, they're just like, go. We're even putting them in buses. I'm hearing now that I'm going to be going down to the border next week in McAllen, Texas, because we're hearing that they're putting them on airplanes as well.
Is that right?
So the problem here is one, it's overwhelming with the numbers that are coming. Second, mm-hmm. there's a national security aspect to all this. There's a lot of bad people that are using these vulnerabilities to gain access to our country. Mm-hmm. And that's where we as a community in the U.S. get hurt, because you will see the criminal element come in. They will come into a neighborhood near you, gang members, MS-13 gang members, cartel members. And by the way, a lot of these unaccompanied minors that are 16, 17 year olds, let me tell you, they are cartel members. They're criminals. Right. And so they're just coming in because you're mm-hmm. in the federal government, you're a minor until the age of 17. But I've seen these videos of these guys carrying these automatic weapons and highly trained, and they're 16, 17 years old, and they're just being allowed. And guess what? All of a sudden they're working with the gangs in Chicago and St. Louis. And so it's not a good thing. It's not a good thing what's happening down at the border. And there's a lot of opportunity for crime here with the child exploitation, forget the drug trafficking. That is just coming in like you wouldn't believe, the amounts of methamphetamine and fentanyl that are coming into our
God
is off the wall. The counterfeit fentanyl pills is a big problem, because we have a lot mm-hmm. of young kids, 16, 17 year olds, that are, they're not drug addicts. They want to take an Adderall, or a college student, they want to take a Percocet or whatever. And guess what? It's counterfeit. It's laced with a amount of too much of fentanyl. They take one pill and die. And people think, it's an overdose, a junkie. It actually was not. We do have the statistics that last year of over 80,000 overdoses of heroin and fentanyl and methamphetamine. And so, as you can see, there's a ripple effect, and that ripple effect all goes down to right now the southern border.
What do you think?
Hold on, my turn. Number one, was Trump on the right track from your perspective? Number one, and how would we actually go? Is it just a dream to be like, we need to seal the borders and it will never happen? It's a dream.
Is it
something that actually, with the current, whatever you want to call, sitting in the White House, is that actually, from your viewpoint, a reality that could happen?
So number one, Trump was right on target. It was very hard to explain. He had a unique relationship with the president of Mexico. The president mm-hmm. of Mexico is a socialist, far left guy, right? Mm-hmm. And somehow he clicked with Trump. You know, that's what Trump did. And he was able to get him to stop the flow, to get him to have the National Guard in Mexico get down on their southern border and stop the people from even coming into Mexico in the first place. And so we saw the reduction. We saw policies like the Remain in Mexico. If you want to seek asylum from your home country, or stay in Mexico and wait there, because unfortunately, these asylum seekers do not qualify. The criteria to qualify for asylum is the same. It hasn't changed. The criteria is very simple. You have to be persecuted by your government because of your race, your religion, or your political views. Mm-hmm. Most of these people, none of that pertains. Because they have high crimes in their countries, because they have poverty, because they have no opportunity, no education, that's very unfortunate, but that doesn't apply to our asylum laws. But the Biden administration has interpreted as it does, that you do have a credible fear, and that's why we're going to let you come in. Well, that's one of the biggest factors changes that under the Trump administration. Trump said, we know you don't qualify. Let's wait to see if, in fact, you do qualify, but you're going to wait over there, not mm-hmm. here, already in our schools and in our communities. And so right now, the second part of your question is, with this administration, it seems like, I don't know if somehow it's done on purpose, because the new Homeland Security Secretary, Alejandro Mayorkas, I hear him go on the news and say outrageous things that I just cannot in as an expert in border security, cannot understand the words that he's saying. He's saying that the border is secure and that the border is closed. He said this on Sunday. And I'm like, what is he talking about? What world is he living in? Mm-hmm. Biden administration just approved $86 million to house the illegal aliens in hotels. Yet we have our National Guard, our service members sleeping in garages in our capital, and we can't put them up in hotels. It makes no sense. We went backwards here from taking care of our U.S. citizens first to all of a sudden caring for other people from other countries, which I'm a humanitarian. I'm a compassionate guy. I understand that these people have horrific conditions, but at what point are we going to say, like you said, are we going to seal this border? Is this a fantasy? Is this a dream? Sometimes I feel that it is because it hasn't been done in a long time. And that's the only way that you can take care of a lot of issues within our country after you seal that border, after you secure it. You know, they stopped the construction of the border wall. Everything that Trump was doing that was working, now it takes time. They undid it.
Exactly.
The first few weeks, it's gone.
It's gone. Hey, what's your thoughts on the National Guard being in Washington right now? We've heard a lot of different views on that, a lot of different theories of why they're there. Can you, from what you know of, do you have any insight of why they are there?
I think it's just very political. I think the Democrats have really used them as to show that there's a threat when there's actually never been a viable threat to them or the Capitol. And you know, they put up the barbed wire fences and I'm like, what's going on? Why don't we have remember they initially back then it was 25,000 of them for the inauguration. Mm-hmm. I'd rather see the 25,000 down on our southern border. Yeah. That's where the real threat is. I think it's politics, unfortunately. You know, there was they were afraid of the Trump supporters. That only went so far. We knew that there was no threat from Trump supporters against any of them. And so now they're starting to let them go. Some of the walls are starting to come down and some of the barbed wire fence, because they can't keep going and putting up this false narrative forever.
Victor, with this border being sealed, let's say, is a hypothetical dream, considering who and what is in the White House or whatever you want to call that whole situation. Where do you see us over the next 4 years?
Oh, my goodness. It's scary. I'm afraid for losing grip on our country. The overall policies, not just the southern border, but the tremendous amount of spending and other things that the Biden administration is trying to do, which, by the way, we don't know who's making the decisions. I'm telling you right now, I can't wait for this press conference on Thursday that Biden is having, because I don't know who's going to speak for him. He's training right now and he's studying like for a test. This is not a person that I think is going to lead us into. We have a lot of issues in our own country. We have homelessness. We have veterans that need attention. We have a lot of crime. Look at the mass shooting that happened yesterday in Colorado. It is we have a lot of issues to deal with in our own country. There's nothing wrong with focusing on us and bettering ourselves. You know, I use this example a lot. When you're flying, and if the oxygen mask comes down, what's the first thing they tell you? Put on your oxygen mask first. Oh. Then you put it on your child. Then you put it on someone else, right? Mm-hmm. But that's, I think that we should go back to, like, let's fix ourselves first. Let's put on our oxygen mask ourselves. And then we could go and try to help, because we know that the United States is one of the most gracious countries in the world. We help the rest of the world. But the way that we're doing it right now, by allowing anybody into this country, is not the right way to go.
Thank you. I appreciate you, you know, coming out here today, really sharing this part of yourself and getting an opportunity to get to know you. And thank you. And we're getting down to the close of the show. And we absolutely would love to have you back on. Can you tell us, when someone goes, Victor, to agentunderfirebook.com, what are they going to get? Can you give us a description of what they'll see there and what they can look out for?
So the number one thing is hopefully you could go in there and click on buy the book now. It's you're going to get a good read off of this book. I know we didn't share the details of the shooting, but I go into the book is about me a little bit growing up on the border, my law enforcement career. I give you some good stories, real stories, especially the one of the biggest human trafficking cases that I worked. And I put some of a little bit of graphic details in there because I think people need to know and understand that this is real. And then I go into detail about my assignment in Mexico and the shooting. I really describe it in detail. I talk about my family a lot. And then the second part of the book is what we've just been talking about, is border security and the solutions that I offer to take care of what's going on down the border with the cartels, sanctuary cities, asylum cases, everything that we're seeing right now. It's in my book. It's an easy read. People will go to the website, will check that out. I also have a media page. You could see every interview that I've done, podcasts, TV interviews, and do that. You could also follow me on Instagram at Victor Avila Jr. It's Victor Avila Jr. And where I post most of the videos and keep people abreast of what's happening on a daily basis.
Right on. It's truly an honor to know you, my brother. God bless you. Yeah, I really wish you well on your journey here. Mm-hmm. Thank you, everybody, for, I hope you got value out of this and enjoyed this. We most certainly did on this. And then, thank you for having us in your home, and we'll see you next time.
And together we are turning the universal key to global harmony, and we will create a unified world. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. And remember, tune in often, tell all your friends, and most importantly, may all your dreams come true. Many blessings.